You're listening to Face Off, episode 41, recorded October 25th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, Mark. So let's hit the show. We got a news and follow-up that actually came from one of our dedicated listeners, Robert Lund. And he found us a sort of competitor or almost analogous website to ZapReader, which we talked about a while ago.
Okay.
It's called Spreader.com.
Spreader.
Yeah.
Like speed reader combined.
Yeah.
Spreader.
I'm a Spreader. We talked about these apps. What they do is you sort of, you know, can put text into a box and then it will show you it in a way that allows you to read it much faster than you normally would by sort of displaying the text in the middle of the screen so that your eyes don't really have to move to read it. And, you know, you can select different sort of words per minute and how many words you want and stuff. But the whole point is that you don't move your eyes. You kind of stare in one spot and you just read the words as they flash up and you can read stuff pretty fast.
I just read something at 300 words per minute.
Yeah. So
that's quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fast and you can retain it pretty well. I've been playing around with it a lot. I found out, well, let's talk about it. First, Spreader is almost identical to ZapReader. It has a little nicer interface, it's a little bit prettier, but feature to feature, I think they're pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm. Do you, put this in as a JavaScript bookmarklet and kind of read stuff?
Yep. Yeah, when I remember to. I've been pretty bad about it. I should do it more, but it's fast.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely works. It's just I need to figure out how to incorporate it into
your workflow, sort of. Yeah, I'm the same way. I just don't. Sometimes when I'm like
I wish.
Wow, this is a really long article. I'm like, oh man, I should, you know, ZapReader.
Yeah, then it's perfect. Yeah, but I almost wish that like Google Reader would have a built-in.
Yeah, one, you could just click it and spread it
or something. But,
very cool. Yeah, for the most part, they're pretty much the same. I don't see a lot of settings in Spreader that ZapReader doesn't have.
Mm-hmm. You can change the words per minute, the chunk size. You can see two words at a time versus one.
You can set the window color. Width and the window height in Spreader, which is nice. You can't do that in ZapReader. But they're pretty much the same. Spreader's a little prettier. ZapReader kind of has this yellow and red color scheme that's kind of like, whoa.
I think it was ZapReader or another one that I saw. You could actually put it in your WordPress. Like, if somebody's viewing your blog, you could say, spread this.
Or, cool.
Or, you know, ZapRead this.
I think it was ZapReader.
And you could click on it and it would do the article.
Yeah, that's a good idea. If this wasn't an audio podcast, I tell you what. I wonder if we could do a pod shift. We should do a pod shifted link. Ooh, think about it. Mm-hmm. PodShift was the application that allows you to put in a podcast RSS URL and it'll speed up the audio for it.
You can specify different times, like 1.5 times faster.
Yeah. Eric Wendelin, one of our listeners and contributors, does PodShift.
1.6, I think.
He did 1.6 on it. So
you know, the iPod now does 2, but it's a little fast.
Yeah, 2 can be a little bit fast. What's nice about things like PodShift is you can set speed. Or with this, one thing I found with these applications, actually, though, I showed it to some guys at work, and it was funny. We were kind of talking about it. Paul Levesque actually said that when he was reading something, he was like, it was kind of like an information tube right to his brain, and he didn't know if he liked it or not. Because
you gotta concentrate.
You have to tune everything out. Like, I put in my headphones that really sort of shut everything else out, you know, and I can really crank it and it works. But if there's any distraction at all, you're pretty much SOL because you have to. One cool thing, like Spreader does that ZapReader doesn't, is really easily tells you which buttons you can use to like pause it and stuff, which is nice. None of them have one that allows you to just increase the speed as you're watching it. They really need to do that because sometimes I'm like, okay, I could go a little bit faster, but instead I have to go to the settings and change it and redo it. And it's kind of
a good point. I wish we would have put this in our like back to school special because as a college, you know, back in college, I really wish I had this to read some of this stuff.
Yeah, if you have like an ebook or something, you can copy the chapter out of your ebook.
It's always like, go read this article online.
Totally. And, but again, it's some people either like it or they don't. I like it. If I can really concentrate on it, I'm like, wow, I just read a big long article in like 30 seconds. And yeah. You feel good. You understand it. I did a test at work with Paul when he was talking about it. I said, okay, send me an article that I haven't read or that we haven't talked about, and I'm gonna zap read it, and I want you to tell me, I want you to ask me questions on it afterwards. And I was able to answer questions and talk about the article I would as if I normally had read it. So, but you do. You need to concentrate on these. You really need to tune everything out. But again, they have Spreeder's nice. It has it tells you how to play and pause it. So if you do have a distraction, you can pause it easily. Because the one thing you don't want, you know, for example, let's say I'm keeping my fingers on the keyboard while I'm spreading this, is if I have to pause it, you can't look away because you'll miss stuff. Mm-hmm. So I can't like look to get the mouse and then look where my mouse pointer is and hit pause. I need to know, you know, like here it's P to pause. I can do that quickly. Like P. Yeah. What do you need? Okay. Yep. Okay. And then, you know, pause it again to get back to your reading.
Good point.
Very cool apps though. I really like them. Like you said, I'm in the same boat that you are. I need to get better about incorporating them into my workflow because you can, especially for really long articles, like, you know, some of like Malcolm Gladwell's articles in New York Times and stuff like that can be pretty long, and it's nice to get through them fast.
Yep.
But good information. So Spreeder.com. Let's get to our web apps. We have two kind of silly web apps this week. They're not super useful, I wouldn't say. But, you know, one of the benefits of the internet is venting, you know, is getting stuff off your chest and you know, maybe talking about how things are bugging you. Twitter is almost like a giant complaint.
That's what I was
going
to say. If we can get a few of those tweets pushed over to some of these services and leave those off Twitter, that would be great. If nothing else, we can kind of try that.
Totally. So the first one, and again, both of these, not safe for work. There is, you know, language in them. Some of the topics are questionable. Some of these, I even wonder if they are true. I think people are just submitting stuff to be, to be silly. But the first one is Mutter, M-U-T-T-R. It's a place to just vent.
Just vent. That's their tagline. So, you know, it's very Twitter-like. You know, you got a short little area and you say, I don't like the way people open doors or whatever that you don't like, your pet peeve or whatever, your rant for the day, daily rant. Instead of tweeting it out and people are like, this guy's ranting again, you know, maybe put it on here.
Totally.
It's anonymous. You don't have to sign up or anything. I think you can sign up to keep track of your different things. But
you know, the funniest thing about Mutter is what a lot of people are complaining about is Mutter itself. like one of them was, I hate how my account was deleted because I was called anonymous, you know, because anonymous is sort of a reserved username on here. So it was deleted his account, or like some of them are like, I hate how when you fill out the form halfway, it removes it if something's wrong.
But like you can say, oh, that was funny, little rant, or show the love, or you're an idiot for thinking rants.
Yeah,
like
totally.
That,
you can be like,
you kind of vote them up and down and things.
Yeah. So it's really simple. It's fun. Again, not safe for work. I probably wouldn't be looking at this at work if you don't want to offend someone or keep your job. So the next one that we want to talk about is a lot like Mutter. It's called F My Life, which, you know, you can fill in the blanks on the F there. But the whole point is like when something really bad happens to you and you just kind of say like, man, that was terrible. F my life. You can go and post it on here.
I'd like to read one here. Today I got my new cat and I tried to reenact the opening scene from The Lion King where Simba gets held up for everyone to see. That's funny. I got a new cat.
Yeah, Simba.
It's cute.
Yeah, so it's cool. This is one. My wife reads this one a lot. She loves it. Yeah, her and her coworkers, she'll come over and be like, did you see this on F My Life? And I'm like, I don't read that junk.
There's just little stories about your life of why it sucks or it's cool or why.
Yeah, especially on F My Life, though, I feel like a lot of them are fake. I'm like, I don't think people are being totally serious about these, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you think people are just putting up stuff for the shock value. The funny thing about F My Life, though, is it's known as FML, and so it's like pretty much everyone ends with, you know, F My Life. Like, that's the whole point, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Today I did this. Today I was walking and I fell on my face and broke my nose and I had a big presentation 10 minutes later. F my life.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah. So these are great ways to get on the internet and vent stuff without cluttering things like Facebook or Twitter, you know? Because sometimes you just want to be anonymous
anonymous. I think that's kind of the big thing. It's like, I did a kind of a crappy thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm not going to post this on Twitter. Get it out of my system. That's interesting.
I don't want to share this on LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly.
So those are two little fun web apps that can help you. You know, one thing about F My Life that I think the reason my wife likes it is because when things are, you know, kind of bugging her about life, she'll go on here and be like, man, my life is not so bad. Because you're like, these are terrible things that happen to people. So
this one is very not safe for work. I just read a funny one.
A couple of them on there. So again, make sure you don't read a word. I know F My Life, I'm not sure if Mutter does, has a Twitter account. So if you want to like get, you know, a couple funny ones a day, that'll put it in your Twitter stream for you. But
like pick the best ones or are they kind of random?
I think just whichever ones the staff feels are kind of funny every once in a while. I don't think there's any real rhyme or rhythm to it, but
I might have to add one of those. These are kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. They're silly. If you have some news or follow up or web application you think we should look at, please go to faceoffshow.com/feedback and let us know. Or if you have comments about the show, we always love to hear it. And we try to get back to everybody and let them know how much we appreciate their suggestions and or criticisms. Because it's true. We're not perfect.
Well, speaking of not perfect, we didn't get a chance to finish off our topic last week, which was...
That's been eating me alive. I feel so guilty.
Well, we're going to get to it and a whole lot more. We've got all of these comparisons on all these sites. So
totally. So last week we talked about source code management, which is a very useful tool. But one of the things we talked about is with both of them, the centralized and the distributed source code management tools, is if you have a centralized, of course, you need a place to put that subversion repository. You need a place to put it. It's essential to how that model works.
Right.
With distributed, you know, you can use it personally, but sometimes it's nice to have a sort of authoritative place to put your source code.
Yep. So other people can say, oh, this is a project that I can work on and I can pull. And
yeah. Or like you're talking about, you know, if you're on different networks, if you're not within a local network, it can be a pain sometimes. So one of these can be helpful as a way to throw stuff up. You know, you can create a local branch in like Git and then push that branch up to the distributed one. And it doesn't contaminate sort of the mainline head.
And that way you don't have to be the central server and like, oh, my computer shut down right now. Totally. Sorry, you can't get the code or or you have to configure routers to NAT traversal.
Yeah. So let's kick them. This is kind of like a big, long, extended web app section, but they're absolutely essential and very useful. There's a lot of them with a lot of different features, so we're going to try and hit them all and talk about why they're
this is going to be a face-off.
Okay, this is a true face-off.
So the first one we've got is GitHub. This obviously, it may not be obvious to everyone. This is the most popular. It's the most popular one for, well, actually, it.
Okay. You have to be careful with popularity, right?
Yes, I do. This one seems to me as the one that's really pushing this whole sort of model.
It's very
hot right now. The distributed source control management.
Totally.
Say that.
Git, I think, is really surging in popularity. We talked about Git, of course, in the last episode. So if you are wondering about any of these things, go listen to our last episode if you haven't. We talk about all these different ones. GitHub is Git only.
Yep. As you can probably tell from the name. GitHub.
Totally. It has a lot of features, though. It's really, you know, it's definitely one of the most popular distributed source control community websites, obviously, because Git is very popular. And so if you're using Git, it's almost synonymous that you're going to know and possibly use GitHub.
Yep. There's a ton of projects on GitHub. And
GitHub is very social. The whole point of it, it's, you know, it's a lot of open source projects are there. It's, you know, the whole point is everybody's there. You can look at people's stuff. You can grab it if you want. You know, it's very social.
You can send people messages. It's almost like Facebook. Like you can send people messages and say, hey, I like this part of your code. Or
totally. So, I mean, isn't it even what is their tagline? It's like social coding or something.
Yeah,
I think
it is. It's called social coding.
So,
social coding.
GitHub, you know, there's a lot of things on there. What's cool is people can create a project, you know, which comes with a Git repository, and people can fork it. So there's a lot of open source stuff on there. So like, let's say, you know, I really like Rails, you know, and Rails is on GitHub. Mm-hmm. But let's say if I wanted to see if I could make changes to Rails, I can fork it. I don't, you know, and then you can do cool things like you can make a fix and then request to them because GitHub knows that you've forked that repository. You can say like, here's a pull request. I fix something, can you pull from my repo,
putting it into the main
Rails. So it's nice. You can pull, you know, or let's say if I wanted to start I wanted to start Jade on Rails. Mm-hmm. I could fork Ruby on Rails because it's an open source project. I can do that and start it from there.
You know, Merb is a fork of Rails.
Is it?
Isn't it?
No, I think Merb? They're two different
projects. They totally started a total.
I think so. as far as I know.
I don't know.
But they're merging with Rails in Rails 3. So
okay.
But it's really cool. You know, like you log in and you have a news feed of what all your friends on GitHub are doing. I have a lot of friends. You know, we'll put links up to our GitHub accounts. Some of our listeners that we had in the past, like Paul and Eric Wendelin, we'll put links up to their accounts on there too, so you can check out some of the cool things that they're doing.
It also has like a revision controlled paste bin, which was kind of neat.
Totally. That's so this is unique. Called Gists. And so, you know, we've talked about pastebin and things like that, ways to paste your code out for your friends to view it. This isn't much different on the outside. You're like, okay, I paste my code, I send my link to my friends, except for every time you paste something on here, it creates a Git repository of it for you. So you can pull it down on your computer and you can push changes up as you make them.
Yeah, that's really
so
cool.
I mean, you and I have used these for things like I've made, you know, like a little script that does something somewhat useful. And then, you know, if I want to make a change to it, I don't have to make a whole new gist. I can just pull from that gist and push back up. Mm-hmm. But it's not really something that requires a whole project on GitHub, you know? Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't really need a whole project. It's just a couple snippets of code that are really useful.
Okay, so what other features do we get as far as, you know, project management style stuff? Like,
it has basic issues. It has a wiki. It supports things. It's very, a lot of Ruby people are on GitHub. It's, you know, it's kind of very, Ruby is very popular on mm-hmm. GitHub. So it supports things like RDoC files. Like if you have a readme.rdoc, when you go to that project page, it parses it and makes it pretty for you because it knows RDoC innately. Mm-hmm. Issues are really simple though. It's like subject and then a description of the issue, you know, which some people like it, some people don't, but it is very simple. It's like, and then when you go in, you can say, you know, this issue's closed. That's really about it. The wiki, it's got a very simple wiki, so you can, you know, you can host a project on there and do a lot of the stuff that you would want to do with project management software.
Okay, so let's. What are kind of the big names? We're gonna do the, you know, the big names.
The name
on
game.
Each
let's drop
these.
Some names, right?
Yeah. So the Ruby on Rails.
Yep.
That's one.
That's a big one.
That's pretty big.
A lot of.
Scriptaculous. I mean, that's a big JavaScript framework.
Yeah, a lot of people use it.
And then, you know, like you said, there's lots of Ruby projects.
Oh yeah, I mean anything.
Most of the Ruby projects are on
Haml and Sass is on there. Jekyll, which is sort of a static site generator, is on there. Sinatra's on there that we talked about. We talked about Sinatra earlier. Mm-hmm. There's some big names on GitHub, but again, most of it's Ruby stuff.
Yeah. So let's get into like the pricing and kind of the, you know, let's start with the free account.
Yeah.
A lot of people are interested in free.
With GitHub, you can get it. You get a free account. You have
300 megabytes of disk space.
300 megabytes of disk space. No private projects, though.
No, unlimited public repositories and unlimited public collaborators.
Yeah, so you can create a project. You can add as many people as you want to it.
Geared, but it has private.
It does, yeah. For, you know, different levels, you can have different number of private projects with different number of private collaborators on it.
Yeah, so like the next step up would be five private repositories, one private collaborator, so that's maybe you and another person.
Yep.
600 megabytes of space, so double. And then you have unlimited public repos and collaborators, and then you get SSL protection.
Yep. So,
and they kind of go up from there.
Yeah. So I like GitHub. GitHub's great.
And I do want to mention also they have an enterprise version where you actually can run GitHub inside your own private network.
Yeah, we were talking about that. That's great.
We were kind of talking about like the cloud and how it's a lot of these, especially the larger companies, are like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to
totally
be trusting this other big company with my stuff.
Yeah, well, it's a great example. Like for where I work, we put all of our stuff up on GitHub because it's all open source software. That's great. But for some of the other groups around campus that aren't doing open source, you know, we're doing research development software. So it makes sense to have it someplace like that that was open source and people can get to. But mm-hmm. let's say you just wanted a GitHub-like system for your private projects at work, you know, for everything else. Because for, you know, it's easy. That's easy to do with Subversion because you can create a private Subversion repository and password protect it really easily. But with Git, it takes a little more legwork.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And definitely, I mean, especially if you have a large project with large amounts of code and things, transferring to the internet back and forth can become bandwidth intense. Yeah. And if you have an enterprise version where you're just internal, mm-hmm. you can limit a little bit of that.
Definitely. And you have the power.
The power.
So let's move on to our next one, which is called Kanai.
I think that's how you pronounce it.
I think I would say.
So this is, I mean, it's Sun. I mean, they have their logo on the top here. And I think it's very Java. I think Sun made it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure.
Yep.
So the first one, when we started looking at this one, we're like, you know, what is this one?
Yeah.
Cause it was kind of different to some of these other ones that we have seen. And I mean, the first one that seems major to me, I guess, is the NetBeans integration.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of Java developers use NetBeans.
Yeah.
Being that this totally is Sun's code repository service.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a big issue.
Totally. Yeah, it has a lot more project management type features as well too. Mm-hmm. So,
and also this one is not Git specific. Yep. This one can support Git, Mercurial, and even SVN.
Yeah, so that's great.
Or, I mean, sorry, Subversion. I should say. I always say SVN.
Well, that's funny. When if you use Subversion enough, you basically interchange SVN and Subversion a lot. So,
It has a build system for code. Because I think that obviously this is kind of geared towards Sun and Java type developers. I think they're going to be doing a lot of compiling since Java is compiled. So a build system, you know, is going to help with that. It's going to build the files for you.
Totally. It also has support for Google Analytics,
which is nice.
One of the other ones we'll talk about later that Mark and I used for a bit has that too. And it's really great to see, to be able to log in and see that, you know, it's maybe on this other website, but I can still see how many people are going to my project and what kind of traffic I'm getting to it.
Definitely. We noticed we didn't find any options or plans for anything, really.
For private projects.
It's public.
It's like almost an open source repository, and that's it. You can only use open source software that anyone can grab and use. So that's a consideration as well.
It does have mailing list support. That seems to be big for definitely the larger products, like the kernel, like Linux kernel is definitely all mailing lists.
Yeah, a lot of those people want mailing. So this is nice. It has support built in for your project for that. So if you're using a big one. So let's drop the names. What do we? Who is using this puppy?
Obviously Sun, JRuby, which is the Java interpreted Ruby.
Yep.
And you know, we have Eric Wendelin, he's been on our show before. He's got Checklist on there, which is a Remember the Milk.
Trying to drop big names, and that's a big name to drop right there. So yeah.
Open Solaris, Sun stuff.
Yeah. So it's useful. I personally probably wouldn't use it.
Yeah.
Just because I'm not working on any big open source projects that I would put on something like that. I want the ability to have a private repository.
Yeah. And it seems like if you're not part of Sun or part of doing some kind of a Java program software, it seems not quite.
It's definitely sort of geared towards Java stuff. You know, I think I would say
at least it may not be, but that's my impression of it.
Again, if we're wrong, let us know, and I'm sure Eric will if we got any of this information wrong. So.
Because when we signed up, didn't it ask us to be part of the Sun Developer Network or something?
No, it just asked if you are already. It'll pull in your information if you are. I see. Don't have to be. No.
Okay.
The next one is Bitbucket. So we talked about GitHub, which is Git specific, but you know, very useful. Bitbucket is, I mean, almost a clone of GitHub, but for Mercurial specifically.
We talked about Mercurial, which is very similar to Git in the last episode. They have very similar layout, very similar, like the same types of pull request, forking kind of stuff going on.
You do get one private repo, though, for free, which is nice. I mean, the pricing is almost identical, except for with the free account, you get one private repo.
We did notice, though, with the higher accounts, Bitbucket started to have an advantage over GitHub.
A little bit. Once you start getting to, like, the enterprise ones like small business and above type ones, Mercurial has a little bit of advantage.
But the free one, which a lot of people are interested in free, of course, is you get 150 megabytes, one private repo for free.
Yeah.
Whereas GitHub, there is no private for free.
Yeah, I mean, I'm paying for the first level of GitHub Plus so that I can get private repositories.
Yep.
But Bitbucket will do that for free. It supports OpenID. Which is cool. We talked about that. That's nice. Yep. You don't have to remember much usernames and passwords. One cool thing that we wanted to talk about, like GitHub, is it supports Gravatars.
Yeah.
Which we love Gravatars.
Yeah. Gravatars are great for having a consistent kind of internet avatar picture, whether it be in a comment or.
Gravatar is a service provided by Automattic, the people that have done WordPress, where based off your email address, it can pull sort of this. It stands for globally recognized avatar. So you can go to this Gravatar service and give it an email address. And if that person has created a Gravatar, it will give you their avatar. So if you see like pretty much any website that's running WordPress that has comments, if there's avatars, they're probably Gravatars.
Yeah. And then, like, if you wanted to change your avatar, you change it in Gravatar, and it changes in everywhere you've ever made a comment.
That works in Gravatar.
It's linked to that really email address.
So, who's using this puppy?
The big names. Last episode we said Mercurial is written in Python, and mm-hmm. so, as you would expect, a lot of the Python stuff. So,
a lot of
big names: Django, which mm-hmm. is the Python with the big Python framework, MailChimp, and Linden Lab, which does Second Life.
Yeah, they're using Mercurial, which is cool. Yep. So again, if you want to, you know, like we talked about Git and Mercurial, the sort of two really popular distributed source control management systems, you've got it covered there with Bitbucket and GitHub.
And the free private repo is very enticing.
It is very enticing, isn't it? I mean, it's...
For me.
But again, it's like, it doesn't hurt me to pay for something like GitHub because I really like GitHub.
And then you got five. You're pretty set. Yeah.
All right. The next one we want to talk about is called Codebase HQ, which I don't have a whole lot of experience with. You've used it a little bit.
The first thing that enticed me to get Codebase HQ was they had they offered one free private
repo. Yeah, they support Git, Mercurial, and Subversion. Yep. Just like
so, you only get 20 megabytes free, but you do get a private repo. Codebase is all private, I believe.
Yeah,
it was all private. It's very project manager style oriented.
You know, yeah, it uses the company that makes it has this Lighthouse project management app, and basically this is Lighthouse with mm-hmm. code repo support.
Yeah, it's if you've ever used kind of like Basecamp, it's very similar to this kind of thing. Yeah,
totally.
With code support.
So like the code support is kind of a tacked on thing at the end. So if you're really looking for stuff that has good, like we talked about with like GitHub and Bitbucket, and they really just have issue tracking and wikis. That's it. Yeah. Other than that, it's just hosting code.
Yep.
This has, you know, like milestones, things like that. Definitely, if you really want to manage your project, you
kind can of an use all-in-one this. Style.
Totally,
it's got microblogging integration. You know, like Twitter. Some of the big names: User Voice. We've talked about them many times.
Yeah, they're using HQ. So check it out. It seems nice. You know, we'll talk later when we get towards the end. I kind of have my own homebrew system, which basically duplicates this. But if I didn't have the experience or the resources to do that, I wouldn't mind paying for an account. I would even pay for an account on here to get a little more space and all that stuff to take care of it there.
Yeah, like I said initially, the one of the reasons was I wanted to use GitHub, but they didn't have a free private, and I didn't want to pay at the time. So
yeah, and you were using Git at the time, not Mercurial. So
right. So now Mercurial is an option, but Bitbucket's looking pretty good. So the next one is SourceForge.
This is the big daddy. SourceForge has been around forever. Ages. It hosts just thousands of open source projects. So many people. I mean,
the Wikipedia article said something like 2 million.
Oh, yeah. So, there's so many people using
When I said SourceForge. That GitHub was the most popular at the beginning of the article, this is the one that's the most popular. I misspoke.
Yeah.
This is the most, but, you know, it's been around a very long time. And
so they support CVS, Subversion, Bazaar, Git, and Mercurial. So a lot of the popular ones.
Yep. The one of the major differences is it's open source and public only.
So kind of like Kanai, there's no private. If you're doing it, it's for open source software exclusively.
Like Kanai though, it does have mailing list support. That's nice. A lot of the, you know, like I said, the really large and older style of project mm-hmm. management is all done through the email and
totally.
They like mailing lists.
Absolutely.
It's got forums. It supports OpenID, which is nice. The big names are PHP MyAdmin. That's
huge. Yeah, I use it.
FileZilla, Audacity. We use Audacity to record this podcast.
Totally.
And JEdit.
Yeah.
It's popular.
I mean, SourceForge has been around for so long that a lot of the multi-language projects have been using it for so long, and they still do. So, you know, JEdit, Audacity, they've been around for a long time, and they weren't really, you know, there wasn't a bunch of the language-specific ones, you know, like, not even language-specific, but, you know, sort of focused. Like, GitHub has a lot of Ruby stuff.
Yeah.
Bitbucket has a lot of Python stuff. Kanai has a lot of Java stuff. But mm-hmm. these are just ones that have been around forever that, you know, were just like, when SourceForge was kind of the first one to do this, they were like, man, that was great. I can get a free CVS repository and all that stuff. Heck yeah, I'm going to use SourceForge.
As long as it's open source.
Absolutely.
They allow almost, I think it's unlimited downloads and everything because
yeah.
it seems like you go, If you're downloading open source free software, chances are you're getting it from SourceForge totally. When you go to download the file.
There was a time there where I just went to SourceForge when I needed some software instead of going to Google. I just went to SourceForge and searched for it because odds are if it was open source, it was there.
Yeah.
And you know, it was a good way to find stuff.
I was downloading stuff from SourceForge before I was even like a programmer.
Oh, totally.
Like just downloading open source software. I didn't even know what SourceForge was.
And when SourceForge changed their layout, it hit like, you know, like, it hit all the big news websites. And like, whoa, that's been the same way forever.
Looks nice.
Totally. So the next one we want to talk about is Google Code.
All right.
So Google Code, they support Subversion and Mercurial. There's no Git support, which is kind of a bummer.
It's kind of odd a little bit.
Yeah, you would think. I don't
SVN
know.
SVN and Mercurial only.
Google is very Python, so it makes sense that they would support Mercurial. And I think Subversion they do just because that's what a lot of people use. But they will probably be Git.
And Mercurial came out in April of 2009, I think it was. April, yeah.
Really?
We looked at it. It was newer.
It's brand new, huh? Wow. Oh, support for Mercurial in Google Code. Yeah. I thought you meant Mercurial.
Oh, no. No, well, originally...
Kind of blew my mind there, Fris.
I have a project on Google Code, and originally it was SVN only. Mm-hmm. There was no Mercurial.
Yeah.
I would have picked SVN probably anyways back then.
Totally.
Because I was using SVN exclusively. Yeah.
Like the other ones, there's no private. It's all open source. Google, if you even look at the FAQ, one of the frequently asked questions, like, why can't I have private projects? And they're like, well, no, we want to help the open source community. Mm-hmm. Google's there's committed no to that. There's no private. Just
even in their
it.
FAQ, it says, well, what about non-open source? They say, no, we don't do
yeah,
it.
Yeah. No. And so with Google Code, you have to pick a license, an open source license. Yep. And there's only like five of them. And one of the other FAQ questions was like, why don't you support more licenses? And they even say, the licensing for open source software has gotten out of control. There's too many licenses. We're pushing these five. So if you want to host on Google Code, you have to use these five and just deal with it.
One of the nice things that stood out from Google Code from the rest of these is a very nice front project page with like a big featured downloads link.
Yeah, it's got kind of a nice layout on the side. It's kind of like SourceForge in that it's designed for the end user getting it, not for the people inside using it and writing code.
Right.
Like if you go to a Google Code project page, it's like, here, download this app. You know, here's how to submit an issue.
Where SourceForge, it was kind of tricky for new novice users. There's different versions. You got to select the right version. Yeah. There's a lot of it can
whereas
kind of confusing.
GitHub and Bitbucket are designed for the developers. Yeah. Like you are developers. This you know definitely
exactly. So like I would be comfortable telling my mother or something, hey, go to this website and get this downloaded.
Because there's that nice green box on the side saying download this software.
I wouldn't dare send her to some GitHub guys thing, you know.
Goodness, no.
You noted like a clunky issue tracker.
I feel like the issue tracker was kind of clunky. It's funny because it has all these sort of fields that just look like text boxes, but once you start to fill them out, it almost looks like you can only select certain ones or you can do whatever you want. And I'm not comfortable with that sort of massaging of like, you know, this like you the flexibility. You know, I like so certain things. I think if they are enums, they should be a drop down. It shouldn't be a text box that I can or cannot agree with. But I think that's part of the fact that Google is using a document DB on the background. So it doesn't have to be really strict like, you know, these other ones. So you can put whatever you want in. But I don't like that. I'm kind of an OCD type person. So it would bug me if someone put like priority really high instead of high. You know, I'd be like, God, that's high. Stop it. You know, I get really sort of picky about things like that.
Okay. One of the, you know, the things that I noticed was that Google Code actually offers more space in all of them.
Yeah.
1 gig of source space and 2 gigs of download space.
It's very Google. Yeah, exactly.
There was no really limits on how much someone can download.
Totally.
You can have different project members and you can set permissions. Like, you know,
like
you
this
can,
person's an owner. This is just a contributor. This is
nice.
Analytics integration, which we talked about earlier, which is again, this is the experience we had. Is it's nice to be able to look and see how many people are going to your code page, and see the numbers of that. That's great. Mm-hmm. Big names that are using this is pretty much any Google stuff, Android, Wave, and Chrome. You know, I think this is Google's sort of project tracker that they use for their stuff.
Definitely.
So the other option to this sort of thing is to, you know, sort of brew your own. Like, what would you do if you wanted to do like a source code management thing? And there's a couple things out there. Like one, a website we found called Gitorious, which is also another place where you can host Git repos similar to GitHub,
but their system is also open source, which you can download and put on your own system.
Totally. So if you wanted a way to sort of run Git, kind of like GitHub, you could install and create your own Gitorious install.
So that one's at Gitorious.org. And yeah, I mean, you can check out their code just like anything else, probably, you know, with Git, clone it.
Yeah.
Install it.
And use it.
And use it.
Yeah.
So it's almost like your own little GitHub or Git or Bitbucket
Totally. So, I mean, if you guys have any other ideas or sort of suggestions or workflows as to sort of homebrew your own sort of SEM system, kind of like these, let us know. I'm curious to what some of you guys use. I personally use GitHub, and then I connect to, it's a Ruby project called Redmine that I keep a local install of mine, and I sort of integrate that with GitHub. I don't use any of like the issues and stuff within GitHub. I don't like that sort of thing, but I'm curious to see what everyone else is doing. What are your thoughts? What are your suggestions? Are there other ones out here that we didn't cover that you use that you really like? Let us know. We'd love to follow up on it.
Yep.
So that is the source code management hosting breakdown, the face-off of all these ways you can host your code and check things out. That about wraps it up for this week of Face Off. I want to remind you guys, if you haven't already, you can go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe to subscribe to the show. And if you have some feedback, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Let us know. We're always happy to hear any feedback from our listeners, and we really appreciate it. And we'll see you guys next week.